Welcome to another episode of The Wholehearted Leader. I am your host and guide, Lance Howard. I'm honored today to bring you Noah Filipiak. He is the author, pastor, and leader of the ministry called Beyond the Battle, specifically beyondthebattle.net. His book is Beyond the Battle, A Man's Guide to His Identity in Christ in an Over-Sexualized World. We all know that there's a huge degree of temptation and discontentment in our culture today. The subject of pornography is a new subject on this podcast, but it is not a new subject for those listening. So I'm honored to bring you this conversation with Noah. And if you find this encouraging or helpful to you, I would ask that you share it with a friend that you care about. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Noah. Well, welcome to another podcast. I'm honored today to have Noah Filipiak with us, author, pastor. We're going to dive into the world of pornography. And I know most of my listeners are of the male audience. So hopefully this serves and helps somebody today. So Noah, thank you for being here. We're going to get into your book, resources, and your story, hopefully as a way to anchor and serve somebody today. So thank you, Noah, for making time. And I will shout out the book real quick, and you can tell us where to find all your stuff here at the front end and the back end. Beyond the Battle, A Man's Guide to His Identity in Christ in an Over-Sexualized World. You got this, plus an online forum for guys as well. So before we lose people, tell us, Noah, where we find you and all those good things.
Thanks, Lance. Yeah, the best resource is beyondthebattle.net, and that's where you can find the book as well as our groups. So we do 7-week online groups for men, and then those groups turn into our alumni community. And the alumni community is free, and it's indefinite, and it's just been an awesome just group of friends, really. And we go really deep together. So yeah, beyondthebattle.net. I'd love to get some, if listeners are alone, isolated, just looking for some encouragement, hop into one of our 7-week groups, and we'd love to go on that journey with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love it. So Noah, everybody gets the first question, maybe even the second question. It's just how we roll. So here it is. The last date you and Jen went on.
Okay.
And what does it reveal about your leadership?
All right. Okay. So I'm going to go with we have 3 kids, first of all. So I'm giving myself my excuse why we don't have a date night anymore like we used to. Before we had kids, I'm like, we used to have a date night every Monday. We were just in Disney World. So you may not want me to take up the whole episode on my Disney World experience, but we were there for a week. Her parents are down there for the summer. For the winter. They're down there. And man, I'm trying to think of the last... You're putting me on the spot here, Lance. I'm trying to think of the last real date that my wife and I had, because her parents are like our babysitters when it's date night, and they're down in Florida during the winter, so it gets a little bit tricky. The trip to Disney World was a gift from me to my wife and kids, kind of her dream trip. Man, the last date that we had. No kids. This will make me look bad. I mean, it would have been before her parents went down to Florida, like late November. That would have been? And I honestly can't tell you what it was. That's when it's been a couple of months. So yeah,
not intended to make you look bad at all. It's to serve the greater good of all of our marriages. Because let's face it, it's. Life is full, families are full, work schedules are full. But I also think it does highlight even one of my clients. He's like, man, keep asking that same question because it holds me accountable and it reminds me of how long it has been. And just a few weeks ago, he's like, "All right, I finally did the date, right?" You know, because it's if we're not intentional in those very mundane spaces, you know, it easily gets overlooked. So,
And seasons of life make it hard, right? So yeah, like that's where we have to be more intentional now in this season of life. And man, it's really easy. It's really easy to let that slip.
You can tell Jen to send me a thank you email here in a couple of weeks when
That's
y'all have
right.
a when y'all have a date. So
Yes.
yeah, love it. Love it. All right. Here's the next one, and then we'll get into your story. What is your preferred style of staying physically well? What does that mean, working out for you and eating wise?
I'm pretty healthy. I ran track in college, and I'm 41 now, and so I've done kind of a I've done a lot of stuff in between then and now. But I got into running in track meets again as an adult. So just the last 2 summers, I've ran the 400 at 3 or 4 different track meets, which was really fun. Did a 4x4 relay with some friends from college. That was really fun. Before my church plant, I was doing some distance training. So I ran the 25K Riverbank Run in Grand Rapids. It's a big race. Did that. But now that I'm church planting, I don't have 2 hours every Sunday or any life in my legs to do those kind of long runs. So I'll get back into track meets this spring. So right now, I have room to, I lift weights about twice a week, and I run on the treadmill because it is like we were talking about single digits outside right now. So I do a treadmill workout at the gym twice a week as well. And I find that keeps me in pretty good shape. And eating, I just eat healthy. I just try to, we try to make as much food at home as we can. And we eat vegetables and, chicken and just make our own food. You know, watch those documentaries about processed food and you're like, wow, that's scary. So we try to buck the trend and eat at home, and it saves a lot of money too. So I'm pretty big on healthy eating and working out within getting the rhythms of normal life and things like that.
Wow, I love it. I find that super fascinating. 4x400 and 400. So I've got to ask, what do you run the 400 in?
Yeah, you better ask because I'm really proud of my time. Last summer I ran 56.75 was my 400 time, which is like 2 seconds off my high school time. Not close to my college time, but I feel pretty good about that. Going out there and kicking some high school and younger 20-year-olds butts, that was
No
fun.
kidding.
Yeah,
No
so.
kidding. Man, I never could get below, like, and I may be on that verge of like fibbing, maybe lying, like 58, 59, like, because I was taught, I'm up 6'4". And the coach is like, "Oh, you'll be great at the quarter and, do all these things." I'm like, "Oh man, that's the hardest race, and it's also the most like thrilling to watch." And that, but that's impressive. Kudos to you. I love
Thanks.
it. And I clearly I just don't live in the world of being around men who are 40 and still doing track events. So I find that super fascinating, right? That's just super cool.
Yeah, it got I like to do different things. I did triathlons for a long time, and then we had kids, and when it's just hard to train with babies around and going out and training. I did sprint triathlons, and then you just have to kind of modify your lifestyle with your kids. And I took a sabbatical when I was 29, and I played a summer of semi-pro football, which was awesome. That was like a totally different training. I put on a bunch of weight, and I just kind of got to switch it up or I get bored. So the track meet thing, it just makes me feel young again. You smell the track. It smells like when you ran, it brings back those memories and kind of get some endorphins running going and stuff. So
All right.
otherwise I get bored. So
Well, you have me on my next question, and you're not supposed to type people at all. And this isn't even my next question. Do you do the Enneagram stuff?
oh yeah, I love Enneagram. Yeah.
I would guess, but I think I know. But do you want to tell us what your Enneagram is?
Yeah, I will. So I'm an 8, but I also say I'm a 3, and you're not supposed to break the rules, but I'm an 8. I don't follow people's rules, and so I just break them anyway, and I am an 8 and a 3. I type out as an eight, but I call my author life a three. Some parts of church planting, pastoring really bring out like the three in me. So I go with those two numbers.
Yeah. Well, you have the reason I asked, you have a high level of energy towards the seven, right? That eight leans into the seven.
Yep, I've got a seven wing from my eight.
The fun and spontaneity and going on to the next hobby, the next one. And part of that's just our wiring as men who have curiosities. We want to follow them and to see if we still have something to prove still. So I love
it. Yeah, there's definitely a drive that I have. I'd say if you put eight and three together, you get a cocktail that's not always good of being very driven. And so you can be overdriven. It can take you to unhealthy places. But I try to harness it the best I can, you know, for the way God's wired me and a lot of achiever in me, you know, those kind of things. That's kind of how it plays out for me. I was a seven because sevens are so fun and happy all, you know, and like I would love for that to be true of me all the time. So.
All right. So let's talk about a little bit of your story. We always have time constraints, but what's helpful to share a little bit about beyond the battle, maybe some resources to equip men. But yeah, just share with us kind of your story of what led you to even pen the book.
Yeah. I'll give you three chapters of my story and I'll keep them short. So I started looking at pornography in middle school. I was a Christian who loved Jesus, fell into it because internet became a household appliance and nobody thought a kid like me would be looking at porn. That was in seventh, eighth grade. Nobody at my church ever talked about porn ever. And I was in church all the time. chapter two would be college. I went to Christian college and I'm studying to be a youth pastor. And I'm like, wow, I'm going to be a pastor. And here I am looking at porn, you know, like this point of something's got to give, you know, you get to a point with an addiction and you go, I've got to find help. Right. That's my prayer is that people get to that point. Yeah. And there's real life consequences to this. And so, yeah, I found community in college. I reached out to an RA that I respected his walk with the Lord and we talked and I just first person I really confessed all this stuff to. And then he and I together connected with some other guys, started a small group, and that became my community. And really in college, I had a few years of real breakthrough, real freedom via community and vulnerability. Chapter three would be marriage. Got married really young. I graduated college a year early. So I was 21 when I graduated, got married at 21. My wife was 22. And I don't remember exactly when it was, but we had a rough first 3 years of our marriage and started looking at porn again. And I am a youth pastor at this point. And somewhere along the way, I planted a church real young as well, 22, 23. And so I'm struggling with porn. I'm a senior pastor at this point of a church plant. And so chapter three was reaching back out to my best friend from college, a guy that we had walked together with through this, you know, every day. We roomed together for 2 years. And we got accountability software. I'm a big fan of both Covenant Eyes and Accountable to You and using those and just talking about it again. And there's a lot going on in my life at the time, which is what I write about in Beyond the Battle. I mean, I wanted to leave my marriage. I wanted to live a promiscuous life. I was very unsatisfied in my marriage. I had a lot of entitlement when it came to sex. So we can get into any of that if you'd like to. That's definitely a part of the story. I was at a real crossroads where I was just going to throw away really my whole faith and follow, like, you know, the world's path of sex just seemed better. Yeah. I did not act on that by the grace of God. And I write about how, you know, and beyond the battle. But yeah, and then I would say since then, maybe there's the chapter four would be, you know, once you get over a porn addiction, there's a lot of layers to go still. There's a lot of things I had to learn and learn about not objectifying my wife, not objectifying women, not having entitlement about sex, the way I view women. And these were all things that nobody taught me in my single years. The sexual purity books we were reading in college did not teach us those things. In fact, I would argue they taught us to objectify our wives. They taught us to just channel our objectification towards her. And so I had to unlearn those things and had a drastic implication on my marriage because our marriage was in pretty rough shape because of those things. And so it's been relearning what love is And there's a lot of layers of that. And so that would kind of be in short, kind of four chapters. I'd say chapter five would be staying in vulnerable community. I really emphasize that a lot. And that for me is our Beyond the Battle alumni community. I can't put my guard down. I can't think that I've arrived. We can get to a point, yes, where we don't desire porn anymore. But once we put our guards down, guess what? Traumatic things will happen. Things will trigger us. And if our guard's down, you know, we're going to be in trouble.
Yeah. No, man, that's so good. Thanks for sharing. And clearly there's probably 72 stories under each chapter, what you just mentioned. I definitely resonate with the sense of, you know, just being a couple of years older than yourself, you know, growing up in a purity culture. And I'm sure you hear this from your guys, like, right, we weren't really equipped in a way to understand like the long-term effects of like the perfectionism and the religiosity of good intentions gone wrong. Right. Because different story, like for myself, you know, sexuality in the context of marriage was very difficult, you know, 20 years ago. So yeah, it was just like, how do you have a God honoring and loving marriage, and this amazing Song of Solomon sex that we weren't equipped with, because it's like, here's all the boundaries. Don't do this. Don't do this. And, even though like God created a female body, amazing, that's not what you were really taught. Right. And it's, and we've got to guard our eyes and all those things. So yeah, we have complete responsibility, and as well as the female body, they have complete responsibility as well. So let me just maybe cut to one part that I think that I'm hearing from men that I serve. On one hand, the gospel, Jesus totally sets people free, right? The blood of Jesus, the body of Jesus sets people free walking in this way. Once you kind of get what all that means. But on the other hand, you have people who aren't walking in the light, who aren't pursuing Jesus, that are also overcoming, you know, the struggle and this addiction. So maybe share with us those two.
Yeah,
that they seem opposed to each other, but how can somebody walk with Jesus and be set free? And then possibly how does somebody pursue a different path and they also find freedom as well?
Yeah, well, we're all wired for connection. I mean, whether you're a believer or not, in Jesus, you know, you believe in God or not, I believe God created everybody, and he created humans for connection. And, you know, porn is just a fake version of connection. It's a fake version of a lot of things. It's a fake version of intimacy. It's a fake version of love. It's a fake version of connection, fake version of acceptance, validation. And so the key to all, for all of us is to get those desires met in healthy ways. Purity culture would have told us, get those met through your wife, you know, get married. That's the wrong message. It's not about a woman meeting those needs for you. No, and on the Christian side of it, for those following Jesus, I mean, I say nobody can meet those needs for you except for Jesus. Like his love alone can give you that acceptance, the validation, you know, that you're looking for. But there's a step two to it as well. And I emphasize this a lot in Beyond the Battle, where you have to it's not just me and Jesus and my Bible, and I prayed this prayer, and I know that he loves me, and I can just remind myself of these truths. I have to be in vulnerable community. And so I would say to your question, like if there's listeners, you know, listening who aren't believers, who aren't Christians, I mean, they can still experience that. They can still experience healthy connection in community. And I just think that's what our society is missing. I mean, we are an extremely individualistic society. I think without question, the most individualistic society that's ever existed. Marriage is the only societal structure that even puts you around another human outside of like dorm life in college, which is really beautiful. I mean, I look back at my dorm life in college and it was really, really good community. I mean, it was for, and not everybody's experience is the same, but mine was really rich. I was just living with my best friends. We had a lot of fun together. The doors are open all the time. We also had really deep conversations about life and about our faith and about our walks with the Lord and girls and, you know, just all kinds of stuff. And I think that points to getting our needs met, you know, in really healthy ways. And so it's up to us, whatever our season of life is now, to say, whether you're single or married, how am I going to get these needs met in healthy ways, these needs for connection? Because I've got to have that desire met in a real authentic way. Otherwise, I'm just hungry and my stomach is empty and I'm just going to fill it with whatever junk is out there in front of me.
Yeah, that's so good. When you were talking just now and earlier about your youth pastoral days, it reminds me of when I was serving as a youth pastor. I did this activity talking about like a sumo wrestler, like, right, you, the old African proverb, like, right, you have two beasts that be within your breast, one foul, one blessed, but the one that you feed is the one that dominates. And it was this metaphor, but we really had these Cool Whip cans, nice, talking about like you can fill your body up with all these things, but ultimately it's not dense and nutritious. It's not really the source of life that you're wanting. Going to your point about needs, right? But as men, we're not really trained. Even with a client this morning, we're not trained and have the emotional vocabulary to raise the ceiling of self-awareness of like, what are my needs, right? Mm-hmm. Even for people following in the way of Jesus, not following the way of Jesus, we are, in general, are not equipped in a way of like understanding what our needs are and how not to feel selfish about going about pursuing those needs. So how do you separate that, and how do you walk guys down a path of like understanding what you mean when you say needs?
Yeah, I'd love to pick that word apart a little bit, because I think it's easy for a guy to say, well, I need sex.
Right.
And so if I'm married and my wife's not giving sex to me, I'm going to go find it in porn. Or some guys will eventually have an affair because they're like, I need sex. And that's not what I mean by getting our needs met. I'm saying there's a need behind that need. And when you're talking about, taking care of our needs, and that's the need for connection. That's the need for, you know, you could use different stories or, again, anecdotes of people's seasons in life. For me in my marriage, it's really easy for me to not have friends, to not have hobbies. I'm a pastor, so I have relationships at church. And then I have my family, and it's really easy for me to just neglect my needs for connection with friends, my needs to hang out, my needs that when I was, and again, I got married so young, my single years look different than many. But when I look back to college, like those weren't needs, because I was connection everywhere. You know, it was all over the place. But we have to, for me, I'll work with single guys. And today it's very normal for a single guy to live alone, in an apartment or a house, and play video games all the time. And they play. I'm not talking about like a game here and there. I'm talking about that's like the activity. You go to work and you might be around some people, but you go home and you play video games and you watch YouTube and watch Netflix. And usually you eat unhealthy food, you know, too, right? at the same time. And you're going, you're not meeting any of your needs. You're the things God created you to do, or even if you weren't a believer, the things like really any psychologist, counselor is going to tell you are healthy, you're not doing. Like you have to get out and make connections. You have to, and it's harder as an adult. But to find clubs you can join, to find groups you can join, to find leagues you can join, to go to church, and not just go to church, but get involved, like serve, be on a volunteer team, join a small group, because the more healthy relationships you can put yourself around, it's scientifically proven. I mean, all these things make us live longer. They help with depression. They're going to help with. So that's what I mean by getting those needs met, those needs for connection. Yeah. Porn can be a like the red light going off. I desire porn right now. So that's a red light. I don't want that. I don't want to go to that, because I know that's a false way of getting that need met. So now I need to run to this list of 10 things that I need to do, right, to get this need met in a healthy way. Because obviously I'm hungry right now for this need for connection.
Yeah, no, that's so good. One of the the tools I use comes out of the pain and peace therapy restoration model. And the coping mechanism under porn, it lists the feelings of failure, invalidated, and insecure as the primary three drivers. And keeping in mind, in the same column of porn is withdrawing to defend. So it's not just porn, right? We're just talking about ways in which we cope, right? Mm-hmm. And porn and alcohol and gaming, our phones are one of these numerous ways. So when you feel invalidated or you feel insecure or you feel like a failure, how do you help equip guys to like begin to take those first steps of like being taking a risk, right? That's ultimately what you're asking guys to do is to take a risk to get in community as the antidote to this solution, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And granted, you just listed a whole bunch of various ways to take a risk. I guess for me, sometimes it's just so close to me that I can't even sometimes articulate the first step anymore. So how do you like, right? If people don't know what the first seemingly very first step to do is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like those micro things that it's like, if you can begin to take these two or three macro steps, you're going to start moving in the right direction to build relationships.
Yes. Yeah. I think taking the risk, that's huge. Like that's part of that first step. I can't speak for every group, right? I can't tell you if you join a XYZ group, you're going to be accepted there. Yeah. I know for our groups, I'm going to plug our groups here, you know, yeah. Guys show up and they're like, wow, I've never experienced this in my life. And I'll tell you, it's different than a church men's group. I've been in church men's groups. You know, they have things they're good at, but they're not built for this type of vulnerable sharing, the acceptance part. Because like you said, with porn, we're feeling like a failure. We're feeling invalidated. We're going to it because now they're this, for us as guys, there's this beautiful woman and she looks seductive. She's telling me she wants me. And now all of a sudden, you know, I have value. Huh. And so what the irony of it is you share your story in the wrong place. Hey, I struggle with pornography, particularly in the conservative church, you know, and someone's going to look at you like, wow, you're a freak. You're a this, you're a that, you know, you're an epic failure. It's like, no, that's the need that I'm trying to have you need to give me the opposite message of that. And so it does start with in our groups. I mean, it starts with knowing that we are sons of God, like that we in our faith in Jesus, it doesn't just save us for eternity. It gives us a new identity. It puts value on us. That is Jesus's value. So that when God the Father looks at Jesus and he just sees incredible value and he just loves his son, we get that same thing. Romans 8 tells us that. So like in our group, one of the weeks, we just walk through Romans 8 and we list out the identifiers of our value. So it's in our head. We have to learn new things about who we are and then pray that it changes our heart so that we start to believe new things about who we are, that we truly are loved, we're worthy of love. But it's in the group setting where you have other guys who are affirming that in you and reminding you of it. And I think that's really where our life begins to change. So, I think a first step is finding a group that's designed for this type of conversation and then take the risk. And I know if you end up with us, you'll be well received, but I think there's other good groups out there too, you know, that are doing good work. And you find a group where this is what they're intentionally built for. And you'll find it's scary, but man, you'll find you're in really good company.
Worthy of love. You bring up an important element of all of this, right? Just being able to rest in that safe place of identity of like, no, I am seen, I am whole.
Yeah.
And I'm worth this. Like I can choose myself and it's not selfish to receive love, but But being able to receive love is a new concept for even professing Christian, because like, yeah, we receive Jesus, but then they're always what I call the nice guy. They're always doing all the things to please everybody else. But as soon as like somebody tries to serve them or do something for them or give them a gift, they have an incredibly difficult time receiving, because they don't see themselves as worthy of being in that position, you know? So, which brings me up to like just the question with you and Jen is like, how have you and Jen, like at this point, built your marriage in a way that, that it's safe, secure, like for people that are kind of on the other side of this journey?
Yeah.
I want to ask that, but I also want to bookend it to come back to, okay, this is what resolution looks like. And how do you help people grow to like these steps of like, this is what I need to share with my wife, or this is what is only appropriate to share with this group?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been married, this summer will be 20 years for our marriage. And I can say, you know, one of the, for listeners listening, I can empathize with listeners who, marriage is really hard, right? There's a lot of pain in marriage. And when you start talking about challenges when it comes to your sex life and things like that, you're not alone in that. I mean, that's very common amongst marriages and Christian marriages. And so you can experience a lot of rejection from your spouse. And you know, women experience that too, but talking in the context of guys, guys, if you felt that rejection from your spouse, whether it was intentional or not, that's deep, and it requires a lot of work to heal from that. And I think as a whole, we're susceptible to a lot of rejection from women. You know, just looking back even to middle school and the girls I had crushes on, and they didn't have crushes on me, and you think about that as kid stuff, but that really sends a message to you inside. Around the same time you start looking at porn in middle school, and you're like, well, these women all accept me. And it starts building this message in you that, you know, women in real life, they have power over me to hurt me and reject me and really deem me as like worthless. Again, not that they're meaning to do that, but that's just, they rejected me. I put myself on the limb. They said, no, I liked them. They didn't like me back, but here these women are, you know, in porn. And so that's a part of this story, you know, for all of us that are struggling with porn, I think. But so back to your question, where we are today, I mean, we've worked through with marriage counselors that specialize in sex and specialize in some of the stuff that we've had to work through. And that's been really good. And I really encourage people, like, go to marriage counseling, do it as maintenance. You know, don't just do it when your car breaks down and you're on the side of the road and it's, you know, you're ready to toss the thing in the garbage. Do it as maintenance, check in, you know? So that's been huge for us. And then, I've found, and again, everybody's different. Every wife is different. Every husband is different in the way they're wired. But, it's easy for me and my wife to go on autopilot with her job and my job and our kids. And so we started just in the last year doing these, you may be familiar with these, Lance. I wasn't until about a year ago. Phanos questions. It's Phanos. And you can just Google Phanos, Phanos. And it's each word stands for something. F is, and you it's a set of questions you then ask each person, each spouse has to answer these questions. So F is feelings. You share an emotion you experienced that day. A is affirmation, appreciation. So you share a positive word about your spouse for that day that you appreciated. Needs, you share something you need from them, from your spouse. It could be something like small or something long-term. O is ownership. What have you done wrong that you need to take ownership of, like personally? And then S is struggles/sobriety. And so that's kind of contextual. If you have something that is like a talking point in your relationship, that's something you're an addict that you're trying to get over, or a bad habit, or something you just messed up on, It's a chance to kind of catch up on how you're doing, you know, when it comes to that. So that's an example of a way that we've connected and has built safety into our relationship, and I think has been kind of part of our healing process. So let me know if I missed anything in your kind of question there. But
no, that I think that was super helpful. Just in that aspect of it's ongoing work, right? You don't arrive on this journey.
Yeah.
What I say of becoming wholehearted, like we're in process. Right? So, but on the front side of all that, or even somewhere in the middle, how do you coach guys in your groups to discern what level of authenticity to share with their wife?
Sure. Yeah, that question comes up a lot, and it depends on your context immensely. Yeah. And some guys, well, here's what I always say, and I have a section in the book about this, and it's not, first of all, I don't think I'm, this is not dogmatic truth or anything like that. Again, every marriage is going to be different. But I recommend, if it's a pornography issue and I'll often get asked, well, when should I tell my wife or should I tell my wife? I don't think it's healthy if you just looked at porn, you know, Thursday, on Friday, to tell your wife, hey, I looked at porn and I feel really bad about it and I'm confessing it to you and I want to change. And the reason is she doesn't have reason to believe you that you're going to change, because it is an addiction. And it would just be like if you had an alcohol addiction and you just, you know, just trashed the kitchen and you know, you were just this angry drunk and then you felt really bad about it the next day and you said, I'm really sorry, I'm never going to do that again. That's not how alcoholism works. You have to get help. You have to get treatment. You may have to do detox. You know, you have to go to AA. You have to, there's all kinds of things, right? There's that. And 6 months down the road, you've been sober for 6 months in the alcohol metaphor. And then your wife might have a reason to believe you that yeah, you know, yeah, yes, you do want to change. I've yeah, seen the sobriety. I've seen the steps you've taken. And I think it's similar with pornography where, I don't think the first confession should be to your wife. And again, some people might disagree with me. And every marriage is so different. I don't think there's one blanket rule for every single dynamic of every woman and man out there. But I think it's healthy to start using accountability software like Covenant Eyes Accountable to You, not with your wife right away. I do that now. She gets my reports now, but that's because they're clean and it just helps me. I really like her getting them because she has a lot of authority in my life. Like it means something. It really helps. It's very preventative. But again, if you're a daily addict and you're going to continue to be for a while, you don't need your wife getting those reports. She doesn't need that. Get help, get in a group. I mean, again, I have my groups. There's other groups out there. Guys are finding freedom from porn and beyond the battle. I mean, straight up, I don't want to say every time, like it's this foolproof plan, but it's really cool. We are really seeing guys find freedom from this. So you're in a group, you get some sobriety built up for weeks, months. And then again, it's contextual to your marriage and your wife. But then you can share the freedom you've experienced. Like, hey, I love you. I don't love this sin. I don't want it in my life. And here's what I've already done. I don't know if you knew I was struggling with this or not. She probably did. Because women are geniuses, you know, like they know when you've already looked at porn or something, right? Like that's pretty common. But my point is, instead of just saying I looked at porn yesterday, you can say for the last 3 months, I've been on this journey, or the last 6 months, I've been on this journey. Here's what I'm doing. I'm still in these groups. I'm using this software. And now I'd like to bring you in, you know, to this. And maybe at that time, some guys in our groups, they've committed affairs. They've had strings of prostitution experience, strip club experience. That's different. And I think in situations like that, talk to a counselor, talk to a marriage counselor, get some advice, have a moderator. But I know several of our guys are doing these full disclosures. I've done a full disclosure with my wife before as well. Once she knows you're finding freedom from this, and this didn't just happen yesterday, she does deserve to know you know, the stuff that you've done. And it's so that she knows, you're not you're not going to hide. You're not going to, there's not more. There's not more. You've told her everything. There's not more, but don't just listen to this podcast and then go do that. Cause that is really, really serious. That would be something you want a counselor to walk you through, you know, the timing of.
I mean, I think the building blocks of just love, trust, and safety, right? Is that, is this serving her? Is this serving the greater good of our marriage in this moment? Or am I going to her in a mother nurturing, very unhelpful way, codependent type of position, or even a manipulative way that, that you don't even know about, right? So I think those are helpful ways to think about a process. And right, yeah, the extreme side of it is that that I think allowing your wife to say like what she is comfortable hearing, right? And just know like once you share and paint a picture, an image, an understanding of the gravity of what possibly did go on, you can't take that back. So to your point, don't just full-blown run after it after this conversation, because you do need trusted people in your life to discern and walk this in a way that honors the marriage, honors you, honor your spouse in a meaningful way. What other resources are you finding helpful in this pursuit for guys?
Yeah, I mean, I'm big on groups. We have a lot of guys who participate in Samson Society as well as our groups. Samson does groups all like they're huge. They've been doing this for years, and so they've got groups running. Their goal is to have a group running 24/7. You know, somewhere, some time zone around the world that somebody could get online and get on to a group. So love what Samson Society is doing. It's free. You can just go to their website and sign up and then just start attending groups. They're kind of run like AA meetings, but that revolves around sex and pornography. And it's from a Christian, you know, perspective. I think groups and community are just really huge. Yeah. So that's why with ours, our 7-week groups, you get a lot of content and there's accountability that you start building with your leader. And then in the alumni group that you join, we keep that totally free. We have 2 Zoom meetings a week that we do with our alumni. We have a WhatsApp group where you can just have constant connection. The resource is having other people in your life. I mean, there's some good books out there, but the resource is having other people in your life. And so on our WhatsApp group, you know, you can put a prayer request anytime. You got, hey, I need somebody to call me. There's just constant community happening. I think that is the go-to resource. You need good content. That's what Beyond the Battle tries to do, is give you the content that can help you change your mind, that can help you change your heart, but you can't do it alone. And that's really, as maybe it's a guy thing, but that is a deception from Satan, is that you can do it alone. And man, we can't do it alone. So groups are huge. If you can find a group locally, your church might have something awesome going on, go for it. I love churches. I'm a pastor. But don't fool yourself that like your standard church men's group is going to provide this for you, because it's not, most likely. And the other thing is, what I used to do is me and my best friend from college, like we'd catch up on the phone and it'd be really good, and we wouldn't do it again for 6 months. That's not helpful. You need something regular that's scheduled weekly, boom, boom, or daily, you know, again, whatever, like boom, boom, boom. And it's a check-in, it's a sharpening, it's a strengthening, it's an encouragement, it's friendship, you know, all of those things.
That's great. That's great. Noah, what have you learned about yourself recently? Like, I know, right, this is a 20-year journey, or even more than that, and you know, the culmination of a book and things that God is doing in your life. But what do you feel like something that you're learning just about yourself recently, as you navigate life and leadership and family and marriage and husbandry
I will answer that. I just thought of one more resource that I want to give a plug for that a lot of our guys do. 7 Pillars by Pure Desire is a 9-month intensive in a group setting. So that's another good one. What have I learned about myself in the last you said year or so.
Yeah, just yeah, recently, whatever that means to you.
Man. So, I'm gonna tie this in like with so when I would follow the trail with pornography and I would get to the bottom of it, I'm looking for affirmation, approval, validation. And there's wounds in me, like childhood wounds, there's wounds in me that are there that this is like the medicine for, and the crazy part is that I struck the same wounds are there when it comes to my need. I'm insecure, and so this is my second church plant. So I started a new church. I did that back in 2005 and 6, and was did that for 13 years. And I had a lot of insecurities when I started the church plant about the size of the church. Everybody asks you how big your church is, and you really feel like the number at your church. It's like the number of what you're worth. And man, God had to just drag me, like humble me, and for a long time to get me to really learn that my worth is in Him. Really learn that my worth is in His love for me, not in the size of my church. So then you publish a book, and it's the same thing. How many copies has my book sold? Did I get a good publisher, or am I self-publishing, or do I have an agent? And all of these things, they give you this sense of worth. I also have a podcast like and you look at the stats of the downloads, and you go, well, that's what I'm worth. That's the value, that I have. Is the number that's right there. And I go to plant this other church, the second church. This was 2 years ago. I'm 41 now. So now today I'm 41. So I was 39. I'm thinking I've learned these things. I'm good. My identity is in Christ, and I'm also expecting the church to grow more, bigger, because I'm 40. I'm 39. My launch team is all in that demographic. We're got a great team, and we just haven't grown in the way we thought. We just haven't. And I'm wrestling with that at the same time that I'm wrestling with my podcast isn't reaching the amount of people I want. My book isn't selling the way, I would want, or the publisher would want. And so what I've learned is I have not arrived yet. That wound is still there. And I find it's helpful to talk about. I find it's helpful to get it out of the shadows, because that's where shame builds up. And there's other people listening that are like, yeah, I struggle with that too. And it's different for different people, right? Like success looks different for different careers. But to be able to take that to Jesus every day and to let Him speak His love over me, I'm in the middle of that healing process. And so that comes to mind because it's something that I thought I was over, and I'm not over it. And so I'm still in the middle of that. And maybe I will be my whole life. I think that's, but I'm learning again that my identity and value is in the love that Jesus has for me. And I'm also learning, I'll tack this onto it, like small things are good. Small things are really good. I have a sermon coming up this Sunday. We actually had to cancel church last Sunday. It was so cold and icy, and snowy here in Michigan. So I got my sermon ready from last week, and we're starting a new series on God, dependence on God, prayer, dependence on God. And so I normally wouldn't preach out of Zechariah. Sounds very fancy, but there's a verse that says, "Not by might, not by power, but by my spirit," declares the Lord, that I love. Zechariah 4:6. Well, there's another verse that I've found, it's just a treasure. I believe it's verse 10. And it says, "Do not despise the small things." And they're starting to rebuild the temple, and everything's a rubble heap, and the temple's never going to look like it used to. And the Jewish Judah, Israel, is never going to look like it used to, and they're sad. And God says, "Do not despise the small things." And I've despised the small things for a long time in my life. And one life, one person listening to this, and it encourages them, and it affects their life, and it brings them hope, and maybe even closer to Jesus. That is a big thing. But because of the metrics that our world has set up, that's a small thing. And so I despise it. So I tack that on to close out of what I'm learning with this insecurity stuff is, man, God is in the small things. And I really want to, there's freedom for me in that. And I want to dive deeper and deeper, you know, into those small things that he's doing in people's lives that my life is touching, and just have peace and joy from that. That's what I'm learning.
It's good. But, I mean, that's a good word to end on. And just thank you for modeling authenticity, even in that moment, to be able to share in a way that helps raises someone else's emotional ceiling of like, oh, that's what it looks like and sounds like to be authentic, right? And just to build real connection, because somebody hears that and receives that and it's like, oh, that me too, right? And then also I'll just highlight the idea of stewardship that I hear, just like, hey, these are the seeds that are in my hand, like, and I'm going to do what my faithful part is in it, and God's going to do the rest to multiply it, whatever that may or may not be. The outcome's up to him, but I'm going to be a faithful steward in this moment. So Noah, thank you for today, and blessings to everyone that has stayed with us. Will you just remind us, website, where to find you?
Yeah, thanks, Lance. Beyondthebattle.net. You can check out the book there, as well as our groups. I'm also at noahphilippiak.com.